You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
And at this day and time, pleasure to be joined once again by David Sampson. He of the Nothing Personal with David Sampson podcast, which he records 58 and a half minutes from now, live. Catch it live. Well, that means you have to break away from our show. Catch it on tape. Okay, you know where to find it at all the usual places. You can follow him on X at David the letter P Sampson, David P Sampson. Top of the morning to you. How are you?
I am outstanding. It is a big week for Nothing Personal.
Anniversary, well, something new happened. Talk to me. What's the big week for Nothing
coat?
Personal?
I mean, what?
So, no, this is just the sport coat on the left of the closet today. So, no, not a different sport coat. Not announcing it yet, but your audience, who I love and so loyal to, look for an announcement today at some point. Am I breaking it here? It's not big news. But you know what, guys? Because of your show, I've been emboldened to take Nothing Personal on the road. I'm doing a tour, going to cities, doing live Nothing Personal shows, and I have no stop in South Florida or the West Coast of Florida yet. Not yet, but second leg of the tour will be to you guys. But you're going to be seeing me now on Tuesday mornings. I may be in different cities at different times. It's going to be interesting.
Well, what are we doing it from Waffle Houses? I mean, it's 8 a.m., you know. To get a crowd at 8 a.m. is a tough get.
No, this is interesting. It'll be at 7:30 p.m. to 9 p.m. It's a show. It's an hour and a half show where I'll be doing an episode within it. I'll still be doing the 8 a.m. live show on YouTube, Nothing Personal with David Sampson. But this is taking Nothing Personal live to audiences, showing them how I do a show, actually doing a show during the hour and a half. It's like an hour and a half performance. I've been practicing. I've been going over costumes. I've been going over rundowns. I've been going over with my road manager. It's a whole Megillah.
He's going off Broadway, Mark.
Exactly. And I like the fact that we might be on the second leg so we can get the second T-shirt that has the second list of dates on it, not the original first list of dates.
It's so funny because one of the bigger conversations, it was a quick one, but a big one, is do you leave room on the shirt for when additional cities are added?
Right.
Or do you just do a whole nother shirt? What's the story with that? And I was told you pick a day and a venue and you stop the shirt. And then if it gets picked up because the show works, then you add to the existing cities to make it look even more robust.
But the best part of those shirts was that the second list of dates, the font never matched the first. That was the best part of those shirts.
I love where your head's at, which is why when we make the shirts, I am very clear with the producers that there's got to be font continuity.
Because I'm crazy. You want the distinction. You want, no. See where we were? We were the second leg right here.
No, I never want that. It's funny because the OCD in me, that's what I thought of. I'm getting what you're saying to show, hey, the first leg worked. Let's do a second leg. But no, I'm a continuity guy because a year from now, no one will remember what was first leg or second leg.
There's no doubt. Good for you. Going on the road, David Sampson will obviously have more of the tour of Nothing Personal that is about to begin. All right, Snell signs with the Giants. Is baseball beating up on Boris, or is it the wrong clients? You know, how is this a win for baseball? As I see you doing the happy dance over there, is this a win for Major League Baseball general managers?
Well, you're seeing fallout, and this is going to be the first big chunk of the show today. First, you see Boris guys not signed. Then you see the first two Boris guys get 2 years plus with an opt-out. And now you're seeing Snell get 1 year plus with an opt-out. And then overnight, you get a story from Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal that there is discontent in the union with one of the lead negotiators. And this has been bubbling ever since the negotiation of the last CBA. This sort of mutiny, while it's being reported today, has been in the works for a really, really long time. And you're going to read a lot about Boris denying that he was involved in the last CBA, about the MLBPA denying that Boris was involved, and it's all horse hockey. Boris was completely involved behind the scenes with his players who were on the executive council, as evidenced when the lockout ended at the end of, when was it, last year, the start of at the beginning of last season, the Boris clients on the executive council all voted to not ratify the CBA. Every other player representative voted to ratify, and therefore it passed, and it went, and we had a season. But Boris and his players were unhappy, and it created a major issue with the union, and we are now seeing the fallout from that. Make no mistake, the other agents are thrilled that Boris's clients did not sign and did not get what Boris promised him. And now we have to look to Pete Alonso, who is a huge free agent, who switched agents to Boris just recently to try to take advantage of his free agency. I can't wait to see what he promised Alonso and whether or not Alonso will actually get that.
Do you think there's collusion at work here, or do you think that there's a few market forces? A, this was an imperfect list of clients. They all had greatness, and they all had really down moments, except for Montgomery, who's basically a number three starter with a bad Yankees tenure. Or is it also the cable money, and that there's 6-8 franchises out there that, quite frankly, are missing $50 million this year, and that's why they're not involved? Is this collusion, or is this forces at work?
You know, you're using the C word and throwing it around like it's, you know, oatmeal. No, do not use that word. It's not collusion. This is Scott Boras. And I'm not being a hack for management. Collusion is when you get instructions that you have to limit an offer or act a certain way as it relates to a thing within collective bargaining, in this case, a signing of a player or what that player is worth. This is finally when Boras overplayed his hand and gave a value to his players, convinced his players that was their value, and then could not get an owner to give. In previous years, there was always an owner who would bail out Boris and make him look smart, make him look like a genius. But he can't appeal to the owners the way he used to because they're onto him. And they look at the way that players are injured. They look at the fact that long-term deals don't work 90% of the time, if not more. They look at their local revenue broadcast streams and realize the world is changing. We can't guarantee anything other than the Dodgers. Really, the Dodgers are the only team who have a locked-in deal for $300 million a year that can't go anywhere because that money is guaranteed by an entity that is not an RSN. So you've got all of these teams wondering what the future is for my revenue. So I would tell you that this is market forces at work that Boris was late to the table to understand.
When you said that the other agents are happy, is it just because they want to get clients or they don't like the way Boris does business? Why would the other, just simple me over here goes, okay.
They can't stand the way he does business. They can't stand the way he poaches. They can't stand the way he tries to exert his influence. They can't stand the press conferences he does at the winter meetings, at the GM meetings, him thinking that he is the sport. They couldn't stand him the way he acted during the lockout, the way he pretended he wasn't involved in anything. But it was so clear that the Scherzers of the world who were on the executive council were simply mouthpieces for Boris. And remember, Boris has always been the same, and I've been saying it for 10 years. Boris cares about the top of the market. He doesn't care about the middle class. He doesn't care about the bottom of the market. And the majority of players are in that middle class or bottom of the market. And they're coming to realize that when a union does a deal that only wants to take care of the few, eventually the many are going to get angry.
When you look at what just went on in the NFL with Justin Fields and Kenny Pickett, is that something you can relate to? Is there a baseball correlation there? Never mind the whole Pickett Steelers behind the scenes thing, which apparently got very ugly very quickly and both sides are staying quiet. But, you know, that's a divorce in which I hate you. I don't want to see you anymore. I never want to see you again.
You know, it turns out they loved each other until Wilson came. And then all of a sudden he claims he found out about Wilson on social media. And I figured the Steelers were doing a Wilson-Pickett tandem. What? That's funny.
Here in the midnight hour.
That's funny. That just clicked in my crazy brain here at 7:10 a.m. But what happened is Pickett said, you know what? I do not want to be a backup. So trade me. And they immediately traded him. What shocked me about the whole thing was really the Bears' decision. Because what they got in return for Fields, that really sets the market. He didn't want to be a backup. Now he's a backup for sure to Jalen Hurts. I think that's the best you could say. He gets a little extra money if he plays 51%. And the Steelers.
He's a backup to Russ, but I know what you're saying, right?
To Russ, excuse me, of course, right. On the Steelers. And what was crazy about it, thank you, is that Tomlin said to Wilson, hey, you're starting. So I talked about this on yesterday's show. If you already know that you're going to start Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh, and then you acquire Fields, I thought they were acquiring him to have an actual competition and maybe even to start Fields. But they're promising Wilson something. What did they say to Fields? You're coming in to be a backup to learn from Wilson? What I don't know what that exactly means if you're an established starting quarterback the way Fields was. And plus, the Bears did not exactly get a haul for him by any stretch. I think it was like a sixth rounder that can convert to a fourth if he has 51% of the snaps in Pittsburgh. So all of it surprised me. And the equivalent in baseball is when you are forced by ownership to make a trade. And that has happened to me many times. Get rid of this player and you don't maximize the value because the market knows that you have no other choice. I thought the Bears could have kept him and traded the first pick and gotten a huge, huge haul, but it seems like they were forced to make this deal.
Well, Caleb Williams is described as generational, and I don't think have you ever been in a spot where you were supposed to draft a generational guy and didn't? Because if he turns out to be great, your career as a GM's done.
Every year there's a generational player. Every year your scouts come to you and say, I've never seen anything like this. The tools of this player, my God, is he tooled up. And then they end up stinking.
Well, and we have less than a minute. So that scene in Moneyball, when Billy Beane's saying to the chief scout, you say you know, you say you know, you say you know, but you don't know. Okay, did you like jump up and down and go, yes?
No. That only if, do you think I look like Brad Pitt?
No. But you don't look like Wilson Pickett either.
Thank God. No, not that Wilson Pickett's a bad-looking guy. I'm just saying that I'd like to be closer to Brad Pitt, but I'm closer to Billy Beane, I would say. No, the way it works inside the room is you have great discussions and you figure out who you're going to draft. But in baseball, you know very well that it's a 50-50 proposition. Draft rooms in football, way more stressful because they have to help you that year.
He's David Sampson. Nothing personal with David Sampson. It is live weekdays at 8 a.m. Apparently, he's about to do a world tour. There'll be t-shirts available at davidpsampson.com.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
21 minutes past the hour. Pat Kerwin to join us in 40 minutes' time. Trent Bally in the play of the day coming up in a handful of moments. But we will begin our inquisition of young Trent here in a moment. First, I have to remind everyone, we're Miller and Moulton. MillerandMoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. And our poll question is, okay, you can have UConn, Purdue, and Houston, or you can have the field. Who are you taking? And Mark, have you seen the early results?
I have not.
They're shocking. 84% are taking the field. Don't you know who wins these things?
Thank you.
So that's our poll question. That Mark Miller, the David Moulton, and Miller_Moulton, and go vote accordingly.
I must say, I hope that the voters are right. It will make for a better tournament if one of the big three don't win it, but I'll take the big three.
Trent, first off, what's your answer to the poll question?
I got the field. I have the field. I like Iowa State a lot.
Iowa State cannot score enough in five consecutive games to win a Natty.
I think for me it's more of this is one of those events where I will always pick the field in that type of question.
Did you fill your bracket out yet?
No.
Okay. When you fill your bracket out.
Tomorrow.
Right. And you tell me that you've got UConn on it.
Then I can backtrack. Yes. Then you can say I told you so. That's a good point. I mean, until you actually do it, I might end up picking
one. You like Iowa State a lot. That's a region final, UConn-Iowa State. Just so you know, you're going to have to at some point. There you go. Now, that's if UConn can get by Auburn in the Sweet 16.
Right.
The Iowa women and the UConn men both got draws that are like, somebody don't like us here? What the heck? By the way, Trent, you've been very quiet, to how you've been the first four segments of our show in recent weeks. Is it because, well, what'd you do last night? You had no college basketball.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Crunch the numbers, clean my apartment a little bit.
Wait, hold on.
Crunch the numbers.
A, you don't make any money.
What numbers were you crunching?
You don't make any money, and you don't bet enough to win enough to have any numbers to crunch. So what numbers were we crunching?
I meant, like, basketball-related stuff.
KenPom,
trying
to figure out if the right KenPom defensive metric to pick out the teams. I did see something yesterday that there's something about being in the KenPom top 40 and top 22 in defensive metrics has produced every champion this century.
I have found probably six of those transitive properties that I've just been going through and trying to decide who I'm going to pick for the win here.
I'm sorry, what was that? What properties?
Transitive.
I think that's the word, right? Where two things, it's like a Venn diagram. You got to find the team that's in the middle of the two categories.
Is this high school science or is this college basketball? What are we talking about here?
It might as well be a science.
Is this a science project that I fear is going to blow up in Mr. May's class, or what are we doing? And also, in listening to this, Mark, I sense that, you know, like we have KenPom and Sagarin. In future years, are we going to have the Bally metrics?
It's possible.
Okay. Well, you know, according to the Bally metrics, so-and-so is 8th in this and 11th in that.
Yeah, I don't know if I could do that. Too much pressure. I'd feel bad if I was doing the holier-than-thou thing and telling people, giving them information. Look, I'm just doing my thing over here. I don't know.
All right, you had 12 pages of notes yesterday. How many pages of notes do you have today?
We're up to 17, and I think that's I think that's about where we're going to stay, is 17.
17 pages of notes!
Can you give me, out of those 17 pages, a lot of pressure because you weren't prepped for this because, you know, we like to produce things on the fly here. You're learning that's how we roll here.
Sure.
Nothing is pre-produced. Give me a nugget or two out of those 17 pages that you find that you keep going back to. Is there anything out of the 17 pages that, you know, as you flip to page 15, you got to go back to page 2?
In the Bally metrics, page 9 of the Bally metrics, what do you got?
Here's one that I actually found very interesting. So in the East region, BYU and Illinois, okay, that's the 6 and the 3 in that region, so potentially meeting in the next round. They are separated in the net by 1. BYU's a 6 seed, but they're 13th in the net. So typically, I mean, that's very high. I don't know. That might be the highest ever for a 6 seed in the net, is all I'm saying. So that's just something to watch. Illinois with Brad Underwood and the trends in March. If you like BYU, if you like if you like that sort of thing, maybe pick an upset 6 over a 3 in round 2. Just something to keep your eye on.
Single spaced or double spaced?
Double. Yeah, I'm not that crazy.
Okay.
17 pages of notes. I'm not that crazy.
Hold on. Is right. Exactly.
Well, and yes, but there's headers.
Hold on. Is front and back one page?
No. It's a Google Doc. You know. So it's just.
This is a type document, yeah. David. This is not to.
Well, remember, he wrote out the brackets by hand. Yesterday, that was a moronic question for me, but he is handwritten brackets, so I thought that was very fair.
I think that's
objection sustained. You're fine.
But yeah, no, if I would have written all this stuff down by hand, it would have been Carpal Tunnel City. So we avoided that route.
All right. Crunching the numbers. That'll be with me all day. What are you doing? Oh, crunching the numbers. It's like our producer.
White I'm going to get two me. Bowls of food.
Right.
And my cat. And I'm going to have my cat take on Trent in a bracket.
I thought you were going to maybe have your 9-year-old.
She wouldn't. There's no way I could get her to fill out a bracket.
Really?
That's not true. If I told her there was a chance she could win money filling out the bracket.
If you incentivized her.
Because now everything in our household is about how much my daughter can make for doing something. She has figured out cash.
So in other words, she's a college athlete.
She's starting her NIL early. Name, image, and likeness. How about vacuuming the house? As long as you pay me for it.
She and her friend on the sleepover, they went in the room, they crunched the numbers. They came out, and they're wheeling and dealing.
Yep.
crunch the numbers, baby. It's March.
All right. Time now for the, what's it, Molly Maid Play of the Day?
There you go. Molly Maid Play of the Day. Brought to you by the good folks at Molly Maid. What do you have for us today, Trent?
So the Minnesota Timberwolves are breathing down the Thunder's necks for the top seed in the West. They're only a half game back. And a lot of that has to do with two main things, defense and Anthony Edwards. And last night they traveled to Salt Lake City to take on the Jazz. And in the third quarter, we got defense and Anthony Edwards.
Another turnover for Utah. Edwards gets it back and threw it down. And one from the rafters.
It was a great call, but you got to go see it if you can. You got to look it up. Anthony Edwards baptizes John Collins way over the top and one, finishes it off. He said it was the best dunk of his life, and he's had a lot of them. So he finishes with 32 points. T-Wolves beat the Jazz by 10 for their 47th win of the season. I'm just excited to see how these guys stack up in the West in the playoffs here in a month. But
well,
there's your Molly
no
Maid
doubt.
Play of the day.
ESPN and TNT are thrilled to have Oklahoma City and Minnesota atop the West. There's no question about it.
Right, I mean, with the Lakers in a play-in game.
Exactly. Warriors, Lakers, you know, out right away and get KD and the Suns and Luka and the Mavs. Let's push them to the side as soon as we can. Okay, let's just make sure we get SGA.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
SGA and Anthony Edwards. I mean, you market that. Crunch those numbers.
The Ant-Man.
Crunch these numbers. 774-5839. That's 239-774-5839. We've crunched the numbers for you. Molly Maid, it's where to go if you're looking to have someone clean your house. The most affordable house cleaners on the planet. Call them today, 774-5839.
And what's that slogan again that we came up with that they put on shirts and we get no credit for? We're really good at that.
Give your spouse the gift of a clean house.
See what we did there? Crunch those numbers. Didn't even need 17 pages to come up with that. That was like the third Molly Maid live read we came up with that. And we'd be great consultants in our next life. Maybe we should do that. Instead, we're doing sports talk radio, morons.
Welcome back to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Before the hour. Thanks so much for being with us. We're Miller and Moulton, millerandmoulton.com, Miller_Moulton on X. All right. I'm going to go to the Bally metric system here.
All right.
Actually, it's KenPom.
Whatever one you want to go to.
But I saw this... what was it? It's a post, right?
Yes.
It's no longer a tweet. It's a post. Using KenPom pre-tournament data, i.e. crunching the numbers, 22 of the last 24 national champions had a top 18 adjusted offense.
Okay.
I don't know what that means. But apparently the two outliers were UConn in 2011 and 2014. And 23 of the last 24 national champions had a top 37, not top 40, not top 35, top 37 adjusted defense. 2021 Baylor was the outlier. And they say you can put an asterisk next to that because that was the year with COVID delays and less games and what have you. So the metrics were a little skewed. Okay. According to those two criteria, how many teams of the 68 then are viable national championship contenders?
Eight.
Good guess. Seven.
Okay.
Three of them are in our poll question.
There's a shocker.
Our poll question, if you missed it, you could have UConn, Houston, and Purdue, or you could have the field. Who would you take?
And Trent's going to have his foot firmly planted in his mouth tomorrow when he tells me one of those three teams are at the end of his bracket, when he said he took the field in today's poll question.
Well, also, we know it's not going to be Purdue.
David, for what it's worth, adjusted offense is the amount of points you score per 100 possessions.
Okay, thank you. And I'm assuming that adjusted defense is the number of points you give up.
Yes, and the reason that it's called adjusted is because you have a team like Virginia or Duquesne or whoever can't score, Iowa State, and you get to compare them to a run-and-gun team.
Right, fewer possessions. Got it. So seven, one of these seven will win the national championship.
All right, give them to me.
UConn, Houston, Purdue.
Right, we got the big three.
All right. Arizona, Creighton, Auburn, Duke. That's it.
That's who's going to win. Anybody else that you have in your bracket, you're wasting your time. Iowa State.
So North Carolina, Iowa State, Tennessee, Marquette, Illinois, Baylor, Kentucky, Alabama, Kansas. All top four seeds. All wasting your time. That's according to the 21st century KenPom pre-tournament data. Crunching the numbers, as we now like to say. So, you buying that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, 100%.
I'm very surprised Duke's on the list. I'm also surprised Auburn's on the list. I didn't realize that they graded out. Now, it's only top 37, which is basically top 10%. Because there's like 363 or 66 Division I teams. So they're basically saying top 5% offensively in adjusted offense, top 10% in adjusted defense. That's basically the criteria. Seven teams qualify. It also surprises me Creighton qualifies defensively. Never surprises me they qualify offensively. They're always very good. So...
this is not crunching the numbers. This is one of the things that I think has hurt the brackets. And Trent would probably tell me that I'm crazy, but I loved filling out a bracket, turning in a, you know, when one guy in the office was in charge of collecting them all, had to grade all the papers, and it wasn't done by a computer. And you looked at a bracket and you filled it out. Now all of these are done electronically. I think that loses some of the luster of filling out a bracket. Like when I did see Trent handwrite his brackets, I smiled.
No, I completely agree with you because my dad was the guy who ran his work pool, and me and my brother Brock would have the clipboard, and literally when games were finished, you had to go through 40 brackets with the highlighter and highlight who got it right.
What do you mean you had the clipboard? How does that work?
You have, like, you know, the 40 brackets on a clipboard with the... that way you can turn the page, and as opposed to stapling them together.
Probably a three-ring binder is what is more along the lines. But
gotcha. Okay. All right.
We've all wanted to carry a clipboard for some money.
Well, there's no doubt. I mean, I was intrigued. I'm like, first off, I'm picturing, now he's all of 24 years old now, so I'm picturing a 10 to 12-year-old Trent.
Wearing sunglasses, hat on backwards, walking around the house with a clipboard?
Totally. Okay. And... you know what? Probably high and tight even at 12.
There's no doubt. Dad's on his eighth Miller Lite.
Right. And he's an athlete. He's in really good shape. You know, he's skinny now. Can only imagine, you know, he was 68 pounds. All right. And he's walking around, but the most serious person in the room. Oh, we got an upset here, 314. And just starts, you know, just going through paper by paper. You know, I'm done with this guy. I'm done with this guy. Right.
Hey, Dad, look at Jimmy Head, Vermont winning. How about that?
I could just picture Trent be the one. Remember when the teacher go up and down the aisles and handing out your grades? You know, C+, do better next time. Okay, I can see Trent just throwing, you know, you're out, you're out, you're out. You still have a chance. You're out, you're out.
I used to beg all my teachers to let me run the pool for the class, and a couple of them actually let me did it over the years. It's a lot of fun.
I've told this before, but I had a Super Bowl board, and it was if in high school it was $10 a square. It was $20 a square, $25 a square, something like that. It was an actual pretty good expensive board for high school. And I remember, and I was collecting weekly for, I think it might have been 10 bucks a square. And I'm collecting weekly, so kids would pay me a buck a week for their square. And I remember walking into a classroom collecting money and the teacher looking at me going, Father Landemeyer was our principal. And what would Father Landemeyer think about that? And I went, well, he's got a square here, he's got a square here, and he's got a square here. So how about you back up a little bit and let me collect my money?
That's great.
In fact, Father Landemeyer said, if you have trouble selling that last square, I'll buy it. Right. So anyway, there's crunching some more numbers.
I like your numbers, David. I like your numbers. It's feeding right into what I need to know, and that's one of the big three is going to win this tournament.
Right. That's our poll question, and sure enough, UConn, Houston, and Purdue, all of them are top five offense, top 10 defense, according to adjusted offense, adjusted defense, and basically you have to be both to win the national title. The only three teams in this century who were not both, UConn in 2011 and 2014, and Baylor 3 years ago. That's it. Otherwise, so UConn, Houston, Purdue, Arizona, Creighton, Auburn, Duke. 2-4 seeds making that criteria. Doesn't Auburn play UConn in the Sweet 16?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Just wondering about that.
Yes.
Thought so.
Mark, have you decided which one of the big dogs you're going to take?
No.
But you will take one of those three.
Oh, absolutely. It'll probably be UConn. I'll be like everyone else. I'm rooting for Purdue. I genuinely am rooting for Purdue, for a team that in a school that wants it so badly and has had so much disappointment. I would love to see Purdue do what Virginia did, lose to the 16, come back and win the whole thing. It would be great for them. I like Edie. I like their team. And it's would be nice to see a school that has had so much disappointment get it right this year.
Let me ask you this, and we know a Purdue fan. I mean, besides the fact Gary Danielson, friend of the show, obviously played quarterback at Purdue, but we know a diehard Purdue fan who's across the hall and produces one of the radio shows in the studio where you guys are at. Ask him this, humor me, say to him, you make the Final Four, but you don't win the title. Is that good enough?
Wow.
Okay, because they haven't been since 80. Haven't even gotten to the Final Four since 80. So I'm wondering to a Purdue fan, is just getting to the Final Four. That's like, I mean, quite frankly, if the Lions had won the NFC Championship game, right?
Yes.
And just they made it to the Super Bowl but lost. Would that have been enough?
Brett in our Twitch chat room is a Purdue alum. He says, not this year. That wouldn't do it.
Okay. So I'm guaranteeing you the Final Four, or you can take your chances.
I'd take my chances if I were Purdue.
So would I. I mean, you have to. Because, David, I think that's a great question, but it's one of those things where it's their pendulum has swung so far in one direction, like since 1980, that's going to hang over them forever until they finally win a national championship. So it's you've got a team
are
this year.
Are you sure? It's funny because when I, you know, and I was at Purdue for all of 4 hours this year broadcasting a game, but in watching a decent number of Purdue games this year and listening to the people talk about Purdue, I don't hear them talk about the national title. I hear them talk about the Final Four. They got to get back to the final. Katie never made it. Painter's never made it. Can they get to the Final Four?
No,
remember, Mark, this is how it used to be in college football forever. You two grew up in Big Ten country. It's totally skewed in recent years. What was the whole deal if you rooted for a Big Ten team?
Get to the Rose Bowl.
Get to the Rose Bowl. That it was get to Pasadena. Everything else after that was a bonus. Michigan lost so many times by the end, it was like, well, can we win a couple of these? Okay, but the whole deal, if you were in the Big Ten, was to get to Pasadena. Not win the national title, not even win the Rose Bowl. It was get to it.
I was with a former Michigan football player last night, didn't win a Rose Bowl. Guys, how many Rose Bowls did you get to? And I mean, before I could get the question on, he went three. And his buddy goes, well, you didn't win one. That didn't matter to him, if you know what I mean. Sure, he would have loved to have won one, but it was right away. It was three. Words couldn't come out fast enough. The word.
And that's why I'm really curious with a Purdue fan. Like, is a Final Four enough? We get over, we end that. No more 1980. All right? Can we get to the Final Four? They'll hang that banner. I'm absolutely convinced they hang that
banner.
Well,
of course. And David, I think that would have been enough last year. It would have been enough, really, the last decade. It's different because it's this team. Edie's gone after this year. Summit, you're going to lose a lot of this team, and this is the group. And that, like Finz Brett said, who's a Purdue alum and a big fan in the Twitch chat room, if not now, when? So I think it is championship or bust this year.
And I wonder if, because it still matters to fans and conferences, you know, they lost the Big Ten tournament. If they would have won the Big Ten tournament, would they would have just been Final Four? But I don't know. I don't know if that matters to a fan anymore.
Purdue's won so many Big Ten tournaments. I mean...
But being upset this year in the way that they were, does that add to it, David?
If we were doing a, I would love to be doing a talk show for this poll question in, you know, Purdue's backyard, and that would be the poll question. All right. I'll give you the Final Four, but I ain't giving you anything else. Or roll the dice and take your chances.
90% to 10% would be roll the dice.
Really?
Yes.
Deep down, do they really think they're going to beat UConn?
Yes.
They're
I don't know if they think UConn's going to get there.
Okay, there. But if you're a Purdue fan, and do you really think your A game is the best game in the country? When you play your best game, do you think you're the best team in the country?
Most dominant player?
You're not. You're not. You're the second best team in the country. Your A game's the second best. Your A game's not the best team in the country.
But this is one game. It's one game. Anything can happen. You absolutely roll the dice.
All right.
I mean, I don't know. You drew the comparison earlier to the Lions. I would have rolled the dice if you said.
I did, yeah. You did. You were making those plans for Vegas at halftime, and it didn't work out for you.
We talked about it. Yeah, and you know what? I got to live with that right now. But in that moment, that thought is so tantalizing. You cannot pass it up.
You're damn right, Trent. I'm with you.
This Purdue team is that good. Zach Edey is that good. He's going to win back-to-back Player of the Year awards.
Right.
A Final Four is enough. Yep. Come on.
Yep. Last guy to do that was Samson. How many times did Ralph cut down the nets?
Oh, that would be zero, David.
Thank you. Thank you.
Just Miller and Moulton. 21,000 is the text line. If you want to chime in on our little Purdue or title or Final Four, roll the dice question. Time to switch gears, though.
Mm-hmm.
From the hard court to the pigskin.
Yep.
Pat Kerwin's in the On Deck Circle. We will talk all things National Football League next with Pat. Thanks so much for listening. MillerandMoulton.com on X, Miller_Moulton.